For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lightning fans, you found the right show for everything you need to know about your favorite team in the NHL. It's the Lightning Insider Podcast with Erik Erlandson. Get ready for insight, historical perspective, interviews, and breaking news that comes from a reporter insider who's got near 20 years on the Tampa Bay Lightning beat. Now for the latest with the Lightning, here's Erik.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back into the LightningInsider.com podcast. I am Erik Erlandson from LightningInsider.com, where you can find my written work, and I do hope you check that work out. If anybody followed my days at the Tampa Tribune, it's sort of the same style and format that I did for the newspaper for more than 15 years. So consider a subscription to LightningInsider.com. There's two plans. There's a monthly plan at $4.99, and there is the yearly plan at $40 per year. So I encourage you to check that out, and if you want a discount code, email me, eric@lightninginsider.com, if you haven't signed up for, and I will provide you with a discount code. So that's eric@lightninginsider.com, and that is Erik with a K at lightninginsider.com. All right, a little delayed in getting this podcast out because, got to be honest, was planning on doing this on Monday, and first of all, the West Coast games totally wiped me out, especially back-to-back nights, Friday and Saturday, a couple of really late or early mornings, if you will, up until 5:45 after Friday's game, and then 6:30 after Saturday's game, and then the events of Sunday were rather stunning, obviously with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the manner in which they were ousted from the postseason in the divisional round, and then the game between Buffalo and the Kansas City Chiefs, which was just wild, wild, wild. Monday was a recovery day for me. So I'm recording this on Tuesday as the Lightning are getting back to practice after a couple of days off as they look forward to the schedule coming up, which is going to be very, very light. Just 8 games over the next month plus. You have the All-Star break in there, and of course, what was the Olympic break was sandwiched in there. The Lightning, the reason for the light schedule, as you probably know, is the fact that they only had 3 games that were postponed that had to be made up, which is tied for the fewest amount of games that have to be made up in the league. Those games were rescheduled. You have the games in Denver and in Arizona that was wiped out in December. Those games have been rescheduled for February 10th and the 11th. So Thursday, February the 10th at Colorado is a 9 p.m. puck drop. And then the next night in Arizona, February the 11th, 9:30 Eastern Time puck drop on back-to-back nights. And then the game that was scheduled in January against the New Jersey Devils has now been rescheduled for February the 15th at 7 p.m. So those are your makeup dates, and that's why you've only got, again, a handful of games here in the next month plus for Tampa Bay, which is going to be an interesting situation. You have games against the Devils, the Golden Knights to close out January, and then you have a rematch with the San Jose Sharks on February the 1st. You go into the All-Star break, and then you just got 3 games over the next 2 weeks plus, and then you pick back up with the regular season schedule on the 23rd, and then the Stadium Series on February the 26th in Nashville. And that game against Nashville on the 26th, it almost feels like a start date or an ending date. It's kind of right in between there, right? Because I think there's been so much anticipation leading up to that game from the players and from the fans alike. It's almost like getting to that point in the season, especially with the way things have transpired this season with all the injuries, with the COVID situation and everything else, and now with this gap in the schedule between the end of January and the beginning of February, that 26th game, the Stadium Series game, it does have that feel of a new beginning, right? It's the end of, it's not the first half of the season, but it almost feels like the next chapter is after that game in Nashville, in the Stadium Series game. Because then it's a sprint. You know, it's the regular season is a marathon, but it almost feels like a sprint because of the schedule that greets Tampa Bay in February or in March and April, because it's a lot of games compacted into the last couple of months heading into the postseason, because a lot of you are already past the midway point. Game number 43 was Saturday in San Jose, and I'm going to touch on the midway point here a little bit as well. But it just feels like that game ends, I don't know what we want to call it, chapter two, starts chapter three. Chapter four is the playoffs, if it's a four-chapter book, whatever metaphor you want to put out there. One other note on the schedule, too, it doesn't have a huge impact on anything other than if you were traveling to road games, the final two games of the regular season were swapped. So on April the 28th, instead of playing the New York Islanders, Tampa Bay will play at Columbus. And then on the 29th, instead of playing at Columbus, they will play at the New York Islanders. So not a huge impact on the schedule there. And I guess the good thing is that of the games that the Lightning had to reschedule, they were road games, right? It doesn't affect the home schedule in any way, shape, or form. All right, before we get into some news regarding the team and, of course, the midseason kind of look at, the NFL Conference Championship games are this weekend. NHL is underway. The Olympics are about to get underway. And everything you need with a sportsbook and integrity and longevity you can find at BetUS. You may not know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That's at BetUS.com. That's BetUS.com. And they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That's 800-MY-BETUS. And you'll receive 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code BOLTS22. That's BOLTS22. They have re-up and referral bonuses as well. BetUS is known as America's favorite sports book for a lot of reasons. BetUS has all your NBA and NHL games with team and player props and loads of NFL futures and NFL odds up already. You can bet UFC matches and prop, PGA golf and round matches, and live betting on most sports, including golf. The online casino has hundreds of games, and the racebook has all your horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable, and the sharp BetUS mobile platform is easy with full betting options. Follow my lead and get your phone, online, and social sports betting partner with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. And don't forget that promo code BOLTS22. All right, real quick, some of the news of the week involving Tampa Bay as they returned from a little mini break, and it was just 2 days. They actually stayed in San Jose after the game on Saturday, flew home on Sunday, took Monday off. As they returned to practice on Tuesday, Nikita Kucherov went into COVID protocol situations. It's the first player since Ross Colton on January the 4th to actually be placed into COVID protocol. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen here with the team in regards to that. One thing that's a little interesting in this aspect is this, well, the week before the All-Star game, so the Lightning's last game is on February the 1st, leading into the All-Star break. The league has changed the testing situations. They are no longer going to be testing players or staff members unless they show symptoms of any kind, and then they will get tested. That announcement was made earlier this month. They're going to get every player, once they return from All-Star weekend, from the All-Star break, will get tested upon returning to the team facilities. And then after that, no more testing of asymptomatic players. So again, only if you have symptoms will you get tested for COVID-19. Remember, the taxi squad situation is scheduled to go away after the All-Star break, unless it's extended between the league and the Players Association. But as of now, the taxi squad situation is supposed to end once you get to the All-Star break. So we'll see what happens after that with teams. And again, this is the last week. This is the last full week where there's daily testing taking place. And then next week, you know, teams will have games up to Tuesday and Wednesday before you hit the All-Star break for the All-Star game in Vegas, which is going to include three Lightning players now. Nikita Kucherov. Steven Stamkos was added to the team as the last man in vote, if you will. He will join Andrei Vasilevsky and Victor Hedman in Vegas for All-Star Weekend, February 4th and 5th. Skills competition Friday night, the game on Saturday afternoon in Vegas. And then, of course, the Lightning don't return to action until February the 10th with the game in Colorado. So again, Nikita Kucherov in COVID protocol, which means he's at most going to miss 5 days if as long as testing comes clear and everything else. So what that means is there's a good chance he's going to miss the two games over the weekend against the Devils and Vegas, but he could be eligible to return for the game on February the 1st against the San Jose Sharks. And, of course, that's pending whether or not any other players end up testing positive. Now, interesting here is that the Lightning reassigned all but one player from their taxi squad back to Syracuse. The three players going back to Syracuse were Charles Hudon, Daniel Walcott, and Andre Schuster. So they only have one player left on their taxi squad as of this recording, and that's Frederick Claesson. With Kucherov going into protocol and Andre Palat returning to practice, assuming it means he's ready to return to games, but we'll see. Again, the Lightning are just stuck with 12 healthy forwards for likely the next two games, so we'll see if they have to make any more callbacks to the taxi squad here for the Lightning here in the coming days. So news to keep an eye on. We're not past this by any means, any stretch of the imagination in terms of COVID and everything like that. So again, Nikita Kucherov in COVID protocols as of this recording on January the 25th, depending on when you're listening to it. So again, Kucherov out for a couple of days. All right, they reached game number 43, as I mentioned. Interesting California trip starts with Victor Hedman. A massive, massive outing for Victor in LA because the Lightning played with just four defensemen. If you miss that, if you miss the explanation on why they had to play with just four defensemen, it's a salary cap situation. The Lightning literally have zero salary cap space. Zach Bogosian already out. Team is also without Eric Chernak and Jan Ruda as well for that entire trip. So it starts in LA. And the reason that they had to play short players is because there's no cap space to add anybody. Yes, they were carrying Andre Schuster and Freddie Claesson on the taxi squad. So they were with them in California, but the reason they couldn't play in that game in LA is because of a salary cap rule that states you cannot exceed the salary cap even for injured players. So you couldn't put, as they did later on, Zach Bogosian on IR because Bogosian was out 2 to 3 weeks. That was announced before the team left for California. You weren't going to put him on long-term injury reserve. I had a lot of people ask that question. Well, how come they can't just put him on LTI? Well, because LTI forces a player to miss a minimum of 10 games and 24 days. So 10 games and 24 days. Bogosian's injury was just 2 to 3 weeks. Number one, if it's a 2 to 3 week injury, you can't just arbitrarily put him on LTI. You have to prove and show to the league that the player is going to miss that amount of time. Everybody should be familiar with that, with the Nikita Kucherov situation, right? All the scrutiny that was involved in that, and the league does investigate these situations. So you couldn't just arbitrarily do that. Plus, you wouldn't want Bogosian to have to sit up that long anyway if he's ready to play. I think that would have brought him back just in time for this outdoor game. So, but you don't want him to have to miss a month, which is what you were asking him to do in that situation. But again, wasn't permitted. So in order to enact the emergency recall situation under the CBA, you have to first establish that you do not have enough healthy players to be able to play in a game. And then the following game, you can enact the emergency recall situation. So that's exactly what happened. It just happened to be, instead of being short one defenseman, the Lightning were actually short two defensemen. So they only played four defensemen for the game to start the trip in L.A., Victor Hedman, Ryan McDonough, Cal Foote, and Mikhail Sergachev. Hedman was almost 35 minutes. McDonough was under almost 30 minutes. Sergachev was 28, and Cal Foote ended up in the 25-minute range, just a shade under 25. So an incredible effort by those guys to play an entire game. And you see situations during the season sometimes where a team might end the game with four defensemen or five defensemen because of injury or whatnot. But to start the game with 4D, it was interesting hearing Victor Hedman say that he was excited for it. He was jacked up for the thought of playing with just 4D because he knew he was going to play a lot. And he did. And he ends up scoring two goals, including a breakaway. I mean, how many defensemen even get breakaway opportunities? But he got one and finished it. And then he ends up scoring the game winner in the third period when the game was tied 3-3. Great play by Nikita Kucherov coming off the wall to find him. Ends up with 3 points on the night, easily the number one star of that game. But that's the whole reason why they had to play with four defensemen in that game. It's a move that's in the CBA to prevent teams from circumventing the cap for... There's many ways that it could be circumvented in those situations. So that's why you have to establish within your team, that you do not have enough healthy players. It just happened the Lightning were short essentially three defensemen because of Bogosian in that situation being unavailable. So that's why they had to play the game with four defensemen. Even Victor Hedman was saying some of the forwards said, hey, I'll take some shifts to D if it'll help you guys out. They were like, no. You take care of what you need to take care of. We'll take care of the back end. And certainly those four players did a ton of good work in that game. So ends up and look, by the time you got to Anaheim on Friday, the emergency situation was enacted. Frederick Claesson and Andre Schuster were both in the lineup for Friday's loss in Anaheim and Saturday's victory in San Jose. So it all worked out, and just something to kind of keep an eye on here as we move forward with the injury situation. Poor Eric Chernak just cannot stay on the ice for an extended period of time. Had already missed 18 games with two separate injuries, and now has missed the last week, and we'll see what it looks like for the weekend. But he was not practicing as the team returned from California ahead of Thursday's game against New Jersey. So very, very interesting times for Lightning defensemen, to say the least. All right, before we get to questions, touching on the midway point of the season. I know we're a couple of games beyond the midway point of the season here as we discuss this situation with you. But I was looking at some numbers, and it's a little interesting with Tampa Bay. Again, near the top of the league in points in terms of wins and everything else. They played a few more games than some other teams. They're at 43, which is tied for the most in the league. Again, because they've only had the three postponed games, they've been able to work their way through the schedule. But again, sitting at the top of the league in terms of points, tied with the Panthers. They played one more game than Florida at this point. But yet, when you look at some of the numbers, the Corsi 4, which is shot attempts 4 versus shot attempts against, percentage-wise, the Lightning are actually only 12th in the league. So just above middle of the pack at 51.4% in the league. The tops is the Panthers at 55, almost 56%. So top of the league in points, 12th in the league in shot attempt percentage. Now, some of that can be skewed a little bit. There's been a couple of games. You think of the few games coming out of the Christmas break where they had the COVID situation and a lot of their top players and goaltenders were missing from the lineup, and you had guys making NHL debuts and team debuts left and right in that game against the Panthers on December 30th. It certainly kind of adds a little bit to that skewing, but again, just sitting 12th in the league in terms of shot attempts for versus shot attempts against, it's sort of the same thing with the shots on goal. They're almost even. And this is all 5-on-5 play, so this doesn't count power play or special teams or even 4-on-4. This is just 5-on-5 play, which is usually a measure of where things are at. Almost 50% in shots, 996 to 992. Again, middle of the pack in terms of shot percentage generation, sitting 15th in the league in that category. But here's where it gets interesting for the Lightning on a couple of situations. The goals for, obviously, when you're winning games, you're going to have a good goal percentage, and that's where they're at, 6th in the league. Just a hair over 55.5%, 95 goals for, 76 against. Again, all 5-on-5 play here. 6th in the league, so they're taking advantage of the opportunities that they do get. And the 95 goals, 7th in the league. Panthers are top at 116. Colorado is the only other team at 100 right now, which they're exactly at 100. And the percentage, again, is 6th in the league. The expected goals, which is a metric which I will not try and explain how it goes. It is subjective in a lot of ways. But their expected goals against, believe it or not, would not be as high as you think it is. They're actually 21st in the league in number of expected goals against, 75. But their expected goal percentage, which is a number of expected goals versus number of expected goals against, they're 5th in the league. So again, taking advantage of their opportunities here, and that includes gaining the scoring chances. They're, again, near their top 10 in the league in scoring chances created versus scoring chances against at 52%. So they're owning 52% of the scoring chances. And they're converting on them. But the other one is the high danger chances. This is the interesting category to me. We know how skilled this team is, but we also know they missed Nikita Kucherov for most of the season up until January, and then you miss Braden Point for four-plus weeks, almost 6 weeks, in November and December, and yet they're 3rd in the league in number of high-danger chances created, behind only Florida and the LA Kings. And their high-danger percentage is 2nd in the league at almost 57%. The only team higher are the Boston Bruins. So that gives you an idea of how many high-danger chances they're allowing. Scoring chances are one thing. High-danger chances are completely different. And the number of high-danger chances against, while the volume is only 11th in the league in terms of number of allowed, their chances for, again, 3rd in the league behind only Florida and LA. So their percentage ranks them 2nd in the league. And the fact that they're scoring on them, 55, almost 56% of their high danger chances for versus high danger chances against, they're converting on. So when you kind of dissect that down and break it down, what does that mean for the team? It means that 5-on-5 play, they're above average, but when they create, it's the high danger, and this is what a lot of teams will look at, especially when you have a goalie like Andrei Vasilevskiy, who you would expect to stop the routine shots on a consistent basis, and he does. What's the thing that Chief says all the time? You know, how many wow saves do you have to make? but make the one, but stop the pucks, stop the shots you're supposed to stop, and then maybe some you're not supposed to. And that's kind of sums up what Andrei Vasilevskiy does. So when you have a goalie of that capability, if you can cut down on the high danger chances against, you're probably going to have a chance in games. And that's sort of the formula that Tampa Bay has. And we'll see what this means down the road, especially once you start to get towards the playing time and everything else when you get there. But again, right around the midway point of the season here, the Lightning are essentially a middle-of-the-pack team on a lot of metrics, a lot of the advanced metrics. But the one that I think a lot of people will look at is, what do you do in high danger chances? Because shot volume is one thing. And we see Team Carolina will shoot the puck from anywhere. The Rangers will shoot the puck from anywhere. So their numbers are going to be a little bit higher. And that's always the debate on measuring shot attempts. Where are they coming from? What's the percentage? And that's where you start to get into the high danger chances and the scoring chances, right? So again, with Tampa Bay, their high danger chances, we know the offensive players that they have. You convert on your chances, you cut down on the team's chances against, and you've got a goalie like Andrei Vasilevskiy. That's usually a pretty good formula, and that's a big reason why this team is where they're at, despite even the absences of some of their top offensive players for a good part of this season.
Don't be left out. Make sure you subscribe to the Lightning Insider on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else where podcasts are found. Now, here again is Eric.
All right, now to the fun part of the show, your questions. As always, thanks everybody who sent them in. I really appreciate the feedback and the opportunity to interact with you here on the podcast. And so let's just jump right into this. The first one was from Nancy, who sent it in actually after the game against LA about, you know, why they could only play with 4D and why couldn't they add extra forwards. Answered the part about why they only had to play with 4D. Interesting aspect of that from Nancy is why couldn't they play with 13 or 14 forwards? It's the same rule situation, right? Like you can't, you didn't have the roster, you didn't have the cap space to add a roster player, was what it comes down to. Even if you put a player on regular injured reserve, which they eventually did with Bogosian. But even in that situation, you can't add a player because you have no cap space. They literally have zero cap space. So that's what it all came down to, which is why they were, because if they were able to add roster players, you know, that you could have dressed Schuster or Claesson or both, or in that case, it would have been both. So again, it came down to salary cap implications. From Dustin, who do you think will be the odd man out of the lineup when the entire forward group is healthy? Obviously, they'll rotate, but curious if Radish or Tkachuk has a leg up on staying in the lineup. It is an interesting situation. They have not come across it yet, except for the one game before they left for California where they did have 13 healthy forwards and ended up being Boris Tkachuk, who was the odd guy out in that situation. So if that's your precedent, I guess, if that's your standard, well, Tkachuk looks like he's the 13th forward at this situation. But that doesn't mean he's going to sit. Even when they're healthy, it doesn't mean they're going to sit. Again, looks like Tkachuk is the guy that might end up being the odd man out. But he'll get time, and as we see, injuries sort of factor into this all of the time. From our guy Wright, how much has Cal Foot's game grown over the season? Do fans have unrealistic expectations at this point in his career? When you're a first-round draft pick, you come with automatic expectations. You can't avoid it. You're a first-round draft pick, so you're supposed to live up to that status. So in terms of expectations, you probably, for most people, you know, most casual observers or most fans, yeah, Cal Foot, he's a first-round draft pick. How come he hasn't had an impact? And I think we get, I don't want to say spoiled here. It's not the right word. But, you know, we're in a sports market where football is king. And the NFL, for first round draft picks come in and make an immediate impact. So you draft guys in the first round because you think they can and they should come in and have an impact on your team, with the exception of maybe quarterback. You know, although we see that certainly plenty of times. So that's where, you know, you start to talk about expectations versus reality. And with the NHL, their players are drafted at 18. Only the top end guys, usually the top 5-6 picks, end up even making the NHL their first year, and even fewer of them have an impact in the NHL. So Cal Foote is in his fourth year pro now. He's in his second year in the NHL. It takes a little bit longer for most defensemen to adapt to the league. I think what we've seen with Cal is his growth in understanding the game, his growth in his reads of the game. His shot is really good. He's got a really good, hard, heavy shot. We've seen it a few times this year. The one thing I continue to worry about is his overall foot speed. And you don't have to be fast if you can get to places and understanding how to get there. But with him right now at this point in his career, his foot speed is still a little slow. And I think that has to be somewhat worrisome. Other aspects of his game are fine. He has grown this year. He's had an opportunity to play. Remember last year, he was in the lineup regularly until they acquired David Savard. And then he didn't play. He played one game after that. He got a couple of games in Syracuse. That was it. Missed all of training camp because of finger surgery. So that kind of set him back a little bit. But in terms of expectations, yeah, I think, again, because he's monikered with a first-round draft pick, so there are certain expectations that come along with that. Whether they're unrealistic or not, that's all based on individual and how they look at things, right? That's what it all comes down to. From Mike Musetta, how many games have the Lightning had where their quote-unquote best 20 players were healthy and available, not in COVID protocol? All 20 guys, I think it's just one. And I think that's opening night. And opening night, they weren't fully healthy because Cal Foote, again, was injured to start the year. So they haven't had a game this year where the 22 players that started with them at the start of the year have been healthy. Not one game. Not one single game. But in terms of the best 20, the top 20, there hasn't been. I can't think of a game outside of opening night where they've had, you know, more than one healthy scratch. Can't think of it off the top of my head. Because, you know, Chernak has missed so much time. Bogosian got injured opening night. He was out 6 weeks. Nikita Kucherov was injured in game 3. Braden Point was injured in November, missed 6 weeks. He had the week of COVID protocol. The West Coast trip, Palat, Chernak, Ruda, and Bogosian were all out. I don't think there may have been one other game where you've had 20 regularly healthy players, but not once have you had a healthy 7D. Not once this year have you had to scratch a healthy defenseman. And that's the interesting thing for me to keep an eye on down the road, assuming they ever get to the point where they're all seven guys are healthy. Who sits? Who plays? You know? So we'll see when that comes, but we're still waiting for that to come. From Anthony, should the Lightning, even though they have no cap space, try to acquire offensive or defensive help? Always asking about adding players. As I mentioned, this team has zero cap space. You cannot make a trade before the trade deadline this year without dollar in, dollar out. You can't trade futures for now, which is what they've done the previous two trade deadlines. Right, they acquired both Barclay Goodrow and Blake Coleman in 2020. Two first-round draft picks and top prospect Nolan Foote. Nobody off your roster. They acquired David Savard last year in a three-way trade that saw them move their first-round draft pick and a third or fourth-round draft pick for Detroit to eat half the remaining contract to be able to make it fit under the cap. So again, futures for now. Can't do that. You can't do that this year. So when you're asking should they get defensive or offensive help, you have to ask yourself, who are you moving? Are you moving Matthew Joseph? Are you moving Cal Foote? Are you moving Taylor Radish, Boris Kachuk, anybody else that's in the lineup? That's what you have to ask. I would like to see this team add some depth. I would like to think that a faceoff, somebody who could win a consistent faceoff, would be in the mix. You would think maybe defensive depth might be there. But again, you can't add depth because that means you have to take away. Because again, it has to be dollar in, dollar out, player in, player out. So whether they want to acquire it, again, it has to be what do you want to get rid of, because that's what it has to come down to. Who is going to go in this situation? If you're looking to make a trade, it has to be player in, player out. So pick somebody off the roster. You want them to add. Pick one or two players off the roster who you're willing to move to make it happen. And then it always depends on the return coming back the other way, right? So I think that's something that you have to look at. All right, good one here from our friend Prajemic. He's got a few of them in here. This is a good one. Imagine if the 2004 Lightning Stanley Cup Championship team could play against both the 2020 and 2021 Lightning teams in a seven-game series. Who do you think would win and why? These are always interesting questions. It's a different era. The game was a little bit different back in 2004. So in some ways, it's kind of hard to compare the two. But I think the 2020 team, I think they're the deepest of the teams. You know, bringing in Bogosian towards the end there and the situation where he was cut free by Buffalo, they were able to bring him in. The acquisitions of Coleman and Goudreau. I think just the overall depth. You know, Braden Coburn was still on the team in 2020. A fully healthy team that year, I think, probably certainly beats the goaltending. Probably pretty even, but I'd have to give a slight edge to Andre Vasilevsky compared to Nikolai Habibulin in 2004. And look, Habibulin was incredible. He was probably, pretty sure he was second on my ballot for Conn Smythe winners that year behind Brad Richards, who had seven game-winning goals in the playoffs. But I just think the overall depth of the 2020 team compared to the 2004 team, you know, the fourth line was, what, Marty Seaback, Ben Clymer, and Chris Dingman. You know, compare that to, you know, a Goodrow, Gord, Coleman line. You know, the Pat Maroon, Seti Paquette, you know, whether it was Carter Verhaeghe or Mitchell Stevens, whoever played on the fourth line. I just think the 2020 team overall depth and the skill level, you know, as great as Dan Boyle and Brad Richards and Marty St. Louis, Freddie Modine, Vinny LeCavalier, you know, you compare that to Nikita Kucherov, Braden Point, you know, a healthy Steven Stamkos. I know he missed the playoffs that year, all but one game. I think the overall skill level is better on the 2020 team as well. So wouldn't be a four-game series, I can promise you that. From Jason, if the Bucks loss to LA shows us anything, it's the importance of a healthy unit heading into the playoffs. Serious concern with defensive depth in regards to recurring injuries. Most concern with the miles Hedman, McDonough, and Sergachev are putting on their legs. What can be done? Just getting healthy. That's it. Just getting healthy is the biggest thing that they can do, because you don't want them to stop blocking shots. You know, blocking shots is what they need to do. It's who they are. It's in their DNA. It's everything that you want them to do. And I think a lot of it just comes down to bad luck. You know, it's the nature of the game today. Everybody blocks shots. There are techniques that you can do to minimize the impact. But at the end of the day, it's a hard piece of rubber coming at you, you know, 85, 90, sometimes 95 miles per hour. So I don't think there's anything that they can be done. The only thing you can hope for is that you get healthy. You can start to spread some of the minutes out. If you can have games like you did in San Jose, where it's a lopsided blowout result, you can take some of those minutes away. And, you know, Victor Hedman can play 20 minutes and spending 22, 25 a night. Same thing with Ryan McDonough. And you can spread those minutes out. But it does make it a little bit harder to do when you have guys out of the lineup and you have to play, no offense, Andre Schuster and Frederick Claassen, they're not up to the caliber of a Bogosian, a Chernak, a Ruda. You know, that's why those guys are in the lineup when they're healthy and the other guys are not. And that's not a disrespect to those guys. That's just the nature of the game. So that's really the only things you can really do is to try and find ways and find opportunities to minimize the impact that the injuries are going to have. To me, anyway, I don't think there's anything else you can do. Another one from Prajemic: Panthers, Leafs, or Bruins? Who do you want the Lightning to meet in the first round and why? Oh, I love these questions. Puts me into spots sometimes. Is there one that's better over the other? I don't know. I mean, the Panthers, we saw what the Panthers can do. You know, they've won two of the three meetings this year. One more meeting still left in April down in Sunrise. Tough six-game series last year against them. Bobrovsky's playing much better this year. Remember, they had the goalie rotation last year. They started with Bobrovsky, went to Driedger, turned to Spencer Knight by the end. Bobrovsky's playing better this year. Florida's a little bit deeper this year. We'll see what they do with the trade deadline. They're a difficult team. They force you to play fast, and they like to stretch you out. They'll give up some goals, but they like to stretch you out, and they have the players that can take advantage of it. The Leafs are the Leafs. Question marks in goal with Jack Campbell, for sure. Their depth is a question mark. Their defense is a question mark. And then you have the Bruins. Tuukka Rask is back, but he hasn't played well to this point. So where is he going to be at come April or May when the playoffs begin? The overall depth of the Bruins. I still keep thinking the Bruins are going to take a step back. And every year they just find ways to win games. So they're sort of in that situation again. I think the one you'd want to try and avoid in the first round is the Panthers. But at some point, if you're going to get to the conference championship round this year, you're going to have to go through Florida either way. It's a difficult situation playoff-wise when you've got arguably the three best teams in the Eastern Conference all playing in the same division, and one of them will be out in the first round, and two of them will be out by the second round. So it can be difficult. No matter what you do, and that's what makes it so hard to win consecutive championships. So the fact that they won two in a row should stand out to you, and going for three is certainly going to be very, very, very difficult. Another one here from Prajemic: I think Cal Foot plays better and better lately. Do you think the Lightning still need to find right-hand D on a trade deadline? I just think they need, if you can, again, we talked about this earlier, if you can add depth, I don't think it matters if it's right or left. I think overall their depth is better on the right side than it has been. It's a big reason why they went out and got David Savard last year. But their depth is better. Bogosian, when he's healthy, has played well. Obviously Chernak, and you know, I think Ruda again continues to be a good fit to play alongside Victor Hedman, which is not easy to do. So they're better situated on the right-hand side than they were last year. I think once you get past the top three on the left side, maybe the depth isn't as good. The top end is better on the left, but the depth maybe is not. If your number four left-shot defenseman is Frederick Claassen, you know, that's not quite the same depth of it. So from Christopher, this is a good question. Has anyone come up with shin pads that maybe come down to cover ankles and maybe part of the foot? How would players feel about that? Seems we lose so many guys that get hurt blocking shots on feet and ankles. It made me think about it. So the issue with that, like soccer has it, right? Like my kids had the ankle pads in their shin guards attached to their shin guards. So you see that in youth soccer. I don't think you see that at the pro level because it can be a little cumbersome for pro athletes. And the situation with hockey is the skates at the ankles already have pads built into them. But again, at the end of the day, it's a hard piece of rubber that's coming at you. And even with all the padding in the world, you're going to feel it in some capacity. You're just going to. And again, a lot of what it comes down to when it comes to blocking shots is, I don't want to say luck, because it's more than just luck involved, but sometimes you have to be lucky. Because if a puck hits you on the shin guard, as opposed to the boot, you know, that's what are you talking about there? 3 or 4 inches? And it's just the placement of the shot, and you put yourself in the right position. There are techniques you can do it. You see the guys when they go kind of go down to one knee and try and block a shot that way. I don't know if a shin guard that connects to an ankle protector would be any better. A lot of the guys you see now, they have that plastic coating, but there's a plastic cover on the top, you know, where the laces are. You see a lot more players use that nowadays. And that's been around for a number of years now. So, but I don't know if anybody has thought about connecting a shin pad to an ankle, because there's already, again, padding protection in the boot of the skate, which is obviously a different situation than in soccer. So, from Matt, we know the Lightning can't keep all of their young talent with the salary cap. Which player do you feel will be gone in the next few years? Colton, Sorelli, Sergachev, Joseph. Oh, boy. These are difficult questions to answer because there's so much that goes into it. It's hard for me to see them parting ways with Sorelli. It's hard for me to see them parting ways with Sergachev. Ross Colton has shown his versatility. He can play center. He can play wing. He can play top six. He can play bottom six. He can play on the power play. You know, he's showing pretty good versatility. And Matthew Joseph has shown versatility as well. He's played in a top line role, a fourth line role. He can kill penalties. He's been out there with Pierre-Edouard Belmar for a good chunk of the year. You see the chances he's created, shorthanded. His speed certainly backs off defenders. It just all depends on what it comes down to in terms of salary situations. You know, the hope is that within the next 2 years, the cap will start to go up. There's supposed to be a $1 million increase, and every dollar increase is a benefit to a team like Tampa Bay. So it's just a question of what are salary demands? How much do they want to stay with the team? Are they willing to take maybe a little bit less in the open market? You know, it's difficult. It's difficult. I mean, Ross Colton already did file for arbitration, I believe, this year. I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought he did file, even though it never got to arbitration. You know, you start to get Arbright's involved. You know, and what's Mikhail Sergachev's role going to be? You know, he is a number three left-hand shot defenseman, even though he gets his minutes per game. He does run the number two power play. So it's a wait-and-see situation to me. What's the cap going to look like? You know, we know the Lightning have cap issues, but what's the overall cap going to look like here in the next couple of years in terms of league revenue? How much is the COVID situation this year going to affect the overall cap? There's a lot of things to kind of keep an eye on. From Tony, how impressed are you with the Lightning considering that they lost a third line from last year, have new faces, and the injuries they face this year shows how well this team is coached and how well big-time players have performed this season, in my opinion. It is impressive. It really is impressive. It's a testament to the players buying into the system, understanding the system, understanding the opportunities that some of these players have been given, the Radishes, the Kachuks, who have waited for the opportunity to make their NHL debut and have come in and taken advantage of it. It's also a testament to the culture of the team. You know, and I go back again to something Julien Brisebois said prior to the training camp in July ahead of the 2020 playoff bubble. Embrace the suck and dance in the rain. Control what you can control. And the biggest thing you can control is what's in front of you. How are you going to perform? What's your compete level going to be like? How badly do you want to win? You know, you can't guarantee yourself wins, but you guarantee you're putting yourself in better positions to win. I really think back to that comment that he made, and I think the team has embraced it. They really have, and I think that's just you establish that culture, that winning culture, that was questioned, right? It was questioned from 2015 right on to 2019, but they certainly pushed past that over the last couple of years and have now established a much different sort of setting in that locker room. So I think it's a big a big reason why they were able to push past some of the injuries and the situations this year and still find ways to win games. Doesn't hurt to have Andrei Vasilevskiy in net either, by the way. Another one here from Michael, a comment, and he's correct on this. The eight teams in the Eastern Conference are set, just a matter of seeding, whereas the Western Conference, only a few teams are set. Yeah, that's pretty much the case, and it's been this case now for the last couple of weeks, because if you look at the top eight, so the Bruins certainly currently sit in the number two wild card position, and they've played fewer games than a good portion of everybody else. At 50 points, there is an 8-point gap between them and the Detroit Red Wings. And then after that, it's a 13-point gap with Columbus as we sit here and talk right now. And Detroit has played three more games than Boston. Now, there are head-to-head meetings between the Wings and the Bruins. But to think that the Red Wings are going to be able to make up an 8-point gap over Boston, hard to see. Hard to see. So your top eight in the East, Florida, Tampa Bay, Toronto in the Atlantic, Rangers, Penguins, Hurricanes in the Metro, and then Capitals, Bruins in the wild card. So as it sits right now, because the Panthers have played one fewer game, even though they're tied with Tampa Bay in points, the Lightning would face the Maple Leafs in the first round. And even Tampa Bay has an 8-point lead over Toronto. So yeah, that's the top eight in the East. Whereas the West, boy, it's going to be a dogfight. Calgary currently sits in the number two wild card spot at 44 points. Dallas has 44 points. San Jose has 44 points. Winnipeg has 41. Edmonton 40. Vancouver 40. So there's, you know, a number of teams still in within range of a wild card spot. You know, and the gap isn't as huge. Minnesota's 9 points ahead of the number two wild card spot. So there is a little bit of a gap there. And of course, they're still in the race for top three in the Central. And then the Pacific. Look, once you get past Vegas, it's interesting how that division is going to play out. We thought that Edmonton would be there. They haven't been. They've really fallen on hard times after a quick start. But yeah, it's a big difference between the East and the West in terms of just how things are shaking out at the moment. You know, kind of looking down the road towards the end of the regular season and into April, it is just going to be about who, you know, where do the seeds fit. Where do teams end up once we get to the end of the regular season? Who fits in where? All right, I'm just kind of looking through here, making sure I didn't miss any questions on this. I don't think I did. Looks like I got everybody in there. Freddie didn't tag the Ask EE on Twitter, but how long until the three-peat? Well, if there's going to be a three-peat, it's going to come in late June. Or early July. So that's how long it would be if it gets there. But again, a long way to go before the team gets there and has the opportunity to even try and do a three-peat. As we just mentioned, it's going to be a very difficult task to get that done. All right, as always, thanks for listening to this podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss whenever a new episode does hit. Try and do one of these every week to 10 days. If you ever have any questions, use that hashtag on Twitter, AskEE, hashtag AskEE, so I can find it and get you included in the show. As always, great questions. Don't forget about that betus.com code, BOLTS22, 125% sign-up bonus. If you sign up today using that, there's a link on my website. You'll see the picture under any story that's listed. It'll take you directly to a sign-up link and get you that 125% sign-up bonus with the code BOLTS22. All right, until next time, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you then.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.